Welcome to the Insurance Huddle, hosted by me, Dr. John Wales. This is the place to be for insurance brokers, agents, and agencies, where we break down topics important to the insurance community with insights from industry experts. Welcome to the Insurance Huddle, the place to be for insurance brokers, agents, and agencies, where we break down topics important to the insurance community with insights from industry experts. Today's expert started his career in investment banking at Goldman Sachs before spending most of his career investing in inclusive financial institutions across Latin America and Asia. While attending the Wharton School for his MBA, our guest created Seguro Seguros with the goal of making access to good insurance easier across all consumer demographics. He is here today to help our agencies by showing us how to develop a more inclusive agency. I would like to welcome to the huddle the CEO of Seguro Seguros, Mr. Nestor Hugo Solari.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much for joining us. First of all, let's start off. Tell us how you entered in the insurance industry, because most of our guests, none of us really set out in life to become an insurance person, but that's where we ended up. So it's interesting. How did you end up in insurance?
It's funny. Every insurance professional I talk to seems to say they got into insurance by accident, but it feels kind of similar for me. My career is largely in finance, as you highlighted. Started in investment banking and worked in investing. Had some knowledge of insurance, but my first real interaction with insurance came when I realized how hard it was for some of my family members to get auto insurance. And that surprised me because I didn't have those issues, but I came to understand later why I didn't have those issues. But That was the first time I really looked at insurance as an opportunity, and kind of once you see it, you can't unsee it, and decided to dive in and try to fix a problem I saw in the industry.
Can you tell us what that problem is?
Yeah.
Because I've never really had an issue of getting something insured or going out, so it's not something that I really understand.
Great question, because I kind of sat in the same shoes, and I realized I didn't have a problem getting auto insurance when the time came, because I went to a fancy school. I lived in the nice part of town. I was getting increased coverage on a newer vehicle. There were a lot of things that played into my favor. I had good credit that don't necessarily factor in the same way for the broader Latino or immigrant and working class population, right? And so I think what we found is that a lot of legacy kind of ways of looking at risk that have developed throughout the years that have done a very good job at underwriting specific parts of the population have kind of fell flat as there's been a demographic shift in the country, right? A larger Latino population growing. The U.S. is the second largest Spanish-speaking country in the world, right? And you have kind of a legacy industry that hasn't evolved to maybe serve good drivers with foreign IDs or someone who doesn't have a credit score and trying to see how do we underwrite their responsibility, right? And so I think what we saw was that a lot of these legacy variables were doing a bad job for people like my family members, who I thought seemed like great risk, and yet were struggling to get auto insurance online, struggling to do it even over the phone, ended up being forced to go in person. But I think that really speaks to kind of more broadly the opportunity that kind of presents itself now with modern technology and increased availability of data for us to reach different populations and maybe take a more holistic look at the target consumer.
Do you think that the broader insurance demographic, do you think that maybe they're looking at certain segments of the population maybe differently because they maybe don't understand the demographic, or they haven't been able to adjust the risk, or maybe they don't have actuarial numbers on that? Is that what you think is happening?
That's absolutely right. I think there are a couple of things that are contributing to it, right? I think for example, credit score, right, historically has shown to be a pretty good strong correlation to certain risk, right? And auto insurance being one of them. But it's not a good indication when if someone doesn't have a credit score, right? Maybe a recently arrived immigrant that doesn't have a credit score, or someone who's working class and skews younger, before they maybe get even a credit history. And so I think the absence of that data historically has forced people into the worst options in the market, which are there for a reason, right? Even when you look at kind of the highest risk customers, high churn, high risk of non-payment, people that may be just buying proof of insurance, a solution needs to exist in the market for them. But oftentimes, people that are otherwise good risk, that good payment risk, good lower risk of loss, are still forced into that bucket because of this lack of data, which today is much easier for us to collect, because a product that historically has been only distributed through brick and mortar paper-based agencies today can be done electronically, and a lot more information can be gathered, a lot more systematically and a lot more consistently, to look at these segments in a more granular fashion, right? And use that new data that we're getting from the distribution, maybe looking at other new sources, right? We have things like telematics now that is very popular across auto insurance. But I think what presents itself is an opportunity to look at new variables that may be able to filter out that bias, that historic bias that has done a great job for underwriting a large portion of the population, but not so good of a job of underwriting a growing part of the population.
You mentioned technology. What is some of the information that you think would help us as agents sell that better to the carriers? Or do you think that the carriers are pretty much stuck in their own actuarial numbers and they're not really going to listen to the agents out in the field? I mean, do you think that there's a solution to the problem?
So I think for certain parts of the industry, you're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, right? Like you said, a lot of carriers won't move without the data, and a lot of that data can't be kind of collected unless the carriers are willing to share claims and payment history data, et cetera. I think that's why one solution we looked at when we're putting together a program is really how can we unify this front-end agent experience that we've built, and all the data we've collected there that has helped us create a more efficient marketing engine, which at the end of the day, as an agent, your main job being distribution. I think a lot of that data has been particularly valuable for us to understand which channels retain better, which channels are different conversion through these different online and offline channels that we can track different ways, right? And so I think that data is really valuable, and that data would be even more valuable kind of paired with that claims and payment data. But I think there's that kind of that tension between you have kind of carriers that are dependent on agents to distribute, but also kind of keep that claims data closely held. And so I think there's an opportunity to connect any if you if, for anyone to connect those sources of data, I think will be very valuable in the future. Again, not just to build a more sophisticated marketing engine, which is extremely valuable, but also to really look at new correlations for loss ratios, right? I think there's a lot of focus on underwriting differentiation in the market, and depending on which product you're selling, right? You have different restrictions on what you can be used for underwriting and rating. But I think there's a lot of information that historically just hasn't been collected. And yes, insurance still needs to be sold, but I think a lot of that data makes that selling process a lot easier.
Do you think that there's anything that we can do at the agent and distribution level to make insurance more inclusive? I mean, what can we do? We're kind of, held captive by the carriers. We can't write our own policies, but what can we do to maybe understand the new market, where the market's going, and make that a little bit more inclusive? Because I don't think it's just Latinos. I think it's all of the demographics, because each population has its own risk assessments and own risk profile. And I don't think that we as an industry are good at dealing with a varied level of demographics. Generally, as a whole, and again, I'm generalizing, but if you go into an Armenian section of town, you'll find a bunch of Armenian agents, and they'll cater to the demographics. If you go to Hispanic area of town, everything's in Spanish, and that's how we're making them feel comfortable. It's the same with all of the demographics. It seems like instead of becoming a melting pot as far as insurance, that we're actually segregating a little bit more. And I think we all want the same for our customers. We're all trying to do the best for our insureds, but I think we're splitting ourselves, apart as far as helping the carriers get the right risks and doing our field underwriting. Do you think that there is a way that we can reduce that divisiveness and maybe start working together across culturally and start working as people rather than as ethnic groups? And then if so, how can we start that at our agency level?
Yeah, the important thing to note is that agents here are the front lines, right? We're the ones often interacting, acquiring and managing the relationship with the customers in charge of selling the policy ultimately, right? And so I think there's a lot of power at the agent level when it comes to providing access. And it can be even from translating materials and having a bilingual agent available if you run an agency in a diverse part of town. I think it can be as easy as that, and also kind of looking at what products are being sold to the other communities that you want to serve. I think one insight here is that when we look at auto insurance, our customer and broadly the Latino community is often buying your state minimum limits, which are offered through specific carriers, right? And so I would say pay attention to which products your community, the community you want to serve, is buying, and get access to those markets. But ultimately, I think it's about lowering the barriers to access here. I think it's making it easy to communicate, easy to understand, and as agents, we have that flexibility, right, to offer different markets and then ultimately advise our customer on what they should go with and why. And I think that's a very powerful position, kind of that place of duty with your customers. And so one big part of it is building that relationship, reaching out and making sure the community knows you're there to help. I think there's a challenge when you look at certain sectors when it comes to the distribution fees that often get charged through agencies and broker networks that sometimes make insurance directly more expensive to the customer. And so it creates a little bit of a tense a negotiating environment, if you will, with an agent and the customer. But in the absence of that, which most products we're selling are, which are kind of where we're getting paid off commissions and renewals, I think there's a big opportunity to build a relationship there. And I think there's a bunch of different ways to do it. And even though we, along with our agency, we decided to kind of take that next step to also try to build a product that we thought is more inclusive. I think there's still solutions in the market that are built for the different communities, right? I think even before we built our product that doesn't use credit score and doesn't use employment, doesn't use education, there's been different carriers that have focused on serving those populations, right? And so I think getting access to those markets is an important piece. So selling the products the community you want to serve buys, and then reaching out and building that relationship. Again, whether it's translating materials, having someone a bilingual on staff, or just plugging yourself into the community some other way, I think goes a very long way in a community where word of mouth plays a big role, right? A lot of people are asking their friends and family who to work with. And I think when you look at a lot of ethnic minority communities, and so I think being a part of the community is an important part.
Agreed. I worked with several of my customers. I made the decision, by the way, not to do the minimum limits. I said, I didn't feel that it was best for my customers. So I would often send the customer, sorry, this is the coverage you need to protect your family. I'm not going to sell you anything less.
Yeah.
So for me, that was a conscious decision. But I noticed that the people that I did that with, that I went out of my way to help and explain, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing, they were the most loyal customers that I had, and they were the most retaining customers that I had. If I went in there and said, okay, you want minimum state minimum limits, here you go, here's your policy, and I'm going to hit you with as much of a broker fee as the state allows. What happens is I'd just become a churn and burn agency. I had
Exactly.
no retention, and that causes bad feelings with every demographic, not just the one you're working with.
And that
So
experience, and maybe just to comment on that, I think that's largely the type of agency that's serving the broader kind of Latino community today. And I think across insurance products, kind of when you describe kind of maybe that churn and burn type of business model, and so I think there is challenges to retention and challenges when you're looking at lower limits and getting lower tickets, right? And so I think that's also part of the challenge of kind of this new age of brokers and agents and building tools and processes that can lower the cost. And I think oftentimes the ability of an agent or even to build kind of some asynchronous processes with some simple technology, I think could make their agencies a lot more efficient. I think that's one way where you can become more efficient and generate the kind of better margins off of these policies. The only way to do that is if you can service more of them. And so I think that's where a lot of the modern technical tools can come in as a way for agents to build that capacity.
what type of technical tools?
I think there's a wide range. I think what's really interesting is just the breadth of options there are breadth of software tools there are in the market today with kind of venture capital backed software development in the insurtech space for agents, for brokers across personal and commercial. I think there's a lot of opportunity there. I think the challenges there is we're talking about a game of margin and basis points, and so you need to be careful about where you're spending your dollars and what technology you're investing in. I think the way we looked at it as an agency is we when we started as an agency, it was me and my co-founder dialing and selling insurance over the phone. We had a WordPress landing page with 5 questions, and that gave us the information we needed to then jump on the comparative rater and type everything in. And that's where we started. And I think from there we started automating as much as we can. We had our third co-founder who was an engineer who came and started building it. But I think even with one part-time engineer, you could build tools. And maybe an example of that is, for example, we require photos, certain photos from our customers since we're doing everything online and digitally. And so before we would have to manually review each of these photos because we wanted to make sure we weren't getting old photos or stale photos and someone maybe has a claim ready and waiting. And so, for example, we built a tool in our app where customers can only take the picture through our app. We know when and where it was taken, so we're not kind of getting scammed there. Because we found that that was something that was taking up a lot of our time, and we said, hey, if we dedicate a good 2 weeks of programming, we think we'll be able to kind of yield this pull some value out of here. And I think it did because a lot of the expense when you look at agencies is also the time and how inefficient it is to review a lot of these policies that may be kind of smaller amounts. And so building tools like that helped us manage more policies with fewer people. I think there's probably value in doing other things like integrating some of these APIs with the comparative raters. I think there's opportunity there. I think there's a lot of focus in the area of APIs and real-time quoting. I think there's a lot of value loss, particularly in the agent space, in the ability to do things asynchronously. And so real time is great, particularly when you're going direct to consumer and small ticket. But when you're running an agency and maybe you're talking to a customer with a bigger ticket, more complex needs, I think there's the opportunity to invest in a lot of these tools like HubSpot landing pages or any of these email tools where you can create either campaigns to reach out to the customers for additional information, or just the opportunity for insureds to solicit or move forward in the process. business asynchronously, so you can kind of have more capacity and manage more policies. And I think there's a lot of tools that are like no code and low code that would be able to go from your agency maybe only taking phone calls to serve maybe complex customer needs to having a form where you can have customers reach out proactively and do things offline. And so those are the kinds of tools I would really encourage at the agency level. I think again, we started with the most basic and then kind of started automating and looking for solutions. My co-founder is very good about not letting me build anything that software exists for already. And so if there's a solution out there for it, we have to review it before we decide to build anything for it. And so I think that's how we also were able to build kind of a little communication agency stack of technology, if you will, along with our comparative rater, but tools like HubSpot and our website manager that allowed us to start managing more policies.
I've noticed that there are two things in the industry that are really prevalent based, and you just kind of back them up. One, we as insurance agents, we think we're marketing and we're not. I think we're shouting at everybody and nobody's really listening. And then two, if somebody does listen and tries to go to our website, we're not very good at catching the fish and cooking the fish. I think there's, just as agents, we think that if we run an ad in a newspaper or if we sponsor a Chamber of Commerce event, that we're marketing, and I don't think we are, because there's a saying, if you're shouting at everybody, you're shouting to nobody.
Right.
We just completed a survey a couple weeks ago, and that survey showed that people still want the connection. People want to buy from people. However, the way that connection is being made is changed. We're seeing a lot more video conferencing, a lot more online discussions. But discussions with a real human being to facilitate that connection. How do you think, and what tools do you think would help our agents define who they're marketing to? I mean, you need to know your demographic on who you're marketing to. When you're marketing to a specific, you market to the Latino group, and that makes it a lot easier because you already know this is the client group we're going after. And I don't think the Bain industry has even found a niche on where they want to market to. So, what advice can you give our agents on how to fine-tune their demographic and how to fine-tune the customers they want? And then, more importantly, how do you get those prospects on the books?
Yeah, I think there's two ends to look at this from, right? On one end is who can you reach and who's responding to your messaging, to your outreach, to your marketing, to your sales? And then also, who can you reach and who have you reached? And who have you reached being who have you sold to, right? We go through kind of quarterly exercises and take a close look at a book to see what's the characteristic. Are we selling to families? Are we selling to individuals? Are we selling to older individuals, younger individuals? What kind of coverage are we selling? What's their language preference? What ID types do they have? And so we take a close look at that quarterly up until now. To know who we're reaching out to, or who we're selling to, and who our pricing is attractive to, who our value proposition is attractive to, and that has informed our marketing. And so, what we found is we're getting older millennials, native Spanish speakers. They spend a lot of time on Facebook, and so that's where we've started focusing a lot of our activity and getting a lot of traffic. Whereas maybe if you're dealing with a younger demographic, maybe you should be on TikTok, maybe you should be on Instagram. You're dealing with an older demographic and a B2B, maybe LinkedIn is your source. But I think there's one thing that's talked a lot about in the venture space today is building community. And I think insurance agents have had to build community historically, kind of locally. That's you put your store in town and you're the insurance provider, but people know the insurance guy because that's where you go to get insurance in town. And I think there's and historically it's been okay, let's send flyers around and then maybe sponsor an event and people see our store downtown and maybe we sponsor a little league team and a rec soccer team in town. But I think today there's a lot more tools that can get you in front of a lot more people. And then also having online tools, you can build community, not just with the town around you, but nationally or statewide. Obviously, we have a state restrictions with a lot of insurance, but you can build across a much broader demographic. And that's what I think a lot of social tools help you do. And that's kind of what the other side, who can you reach, right? I think there's an opportunity to build a community around any expertise you may have as an agency owner around product or just any value add topic that adds value to your customers. Maybe you're insuring a specific type of business and you can develop a podcast for those business owners or you have a specialized knowledge and you build YouTube and you build a community around that. I think there's a very large opportunity to do that because ultimately, like you said, people want to buy from a person, but that doesn't mean they want to go in and shake a hand and sit and wait the 45 minutes while you service another customer. I think that the human touch and that human interaction has kind of shifted, like you said, video conferencing and across these social platforms. And so I think one way is really to try to start putting content out there, seeing what resonates, seeing what platform it resonates on, and try to drive growth there. And within a community, it's much easier to then once you know who's in your community, who's responding to your material and who's following you and who's interacting with your newsletter or your LinkedIn profile, there you can take a close look at, okay, what do these people need? Let me get that market and let me serve that need. And I think vice versa, also once you already know who your product is for, then you can kind of try to reverse engineer, okay, what channel should I be on and where should I be building this community? And I think that's what it really comes back down to is building a community because I think that's one way to lower your costs. And ultimately every agency owner kind of ultimately comes back to word of mouth and that's how you sell through existing customers and building community. And so I think that's the real question is how can you most effectively build a community around your product or around a product you want?
Building a community, I think that's a good one. I'm not sure that I fully ever did that or understood it. I knew I became a niche and I became the subject matter experts for things, and then people started coming to me for that. So I guess that
Exactly.
I kind of accidentally built a community, but I don't think that it was intentional.
Yeah,
And
and sorry, you built that authority, right? That kind of niche and that know-how that people came to you for. I think maybe back in the day you could have built a TikTok profile around that. And I think that having that authority and sharing and helping people grow and creating value for other people, I think that's exactly how you build community today as well.
you bring up a great point that in order to engage the demographic, you have to know the demographic, you have to know what products they need, and then you have to have their product. I'm seeing in the industry, okay, we know what products people want, but it's getting the access to that product that is becoming more and more challenging as the insurance market's tightening down. But as one of my team members said, you can't sell peanut butter if you don't have it on the shelf. So, have you noticed that when you're working with the carriers, have they become stricter and harder to get appointed with?
So I guess I would caveat I have the limited experience that we founded our agency 4 years ago now, and so I guess but throughout that time I've consistently gathered appointments. I've seen a couple of carriers who I would have expected to be very comfortable with state-to-state expansion, maybe question production or ask to circle back on appointments and geographic expansion. I think for us, ever since the beginning, it was a little bit of a challenge since we were new to the insurance game. I had to kind of reach out and build relationships with the territory managers and let them know that, hey, I'm serious and a lot of those online type applications never really worked for us. And so I think for us, it was always a little bit of a challenge. I don't know if it's gotten harder for us. I think what we saw was the opportunity to build a product in the gap we found, right? We didn't find a carrier that really fit the product we were looking for or the product we wanted. And so that's how we ultimately decided to take that next step and put together a program. I think fortunately with the availability of technology is to for policy admin systems and across the board, it's building your own program is a lot more accessible than it ever has been before. And I think that was our solution to not having access to the product we wanted. But I think what I found for us, it always ultimately became about building that relationship, and reaching out and letting people know kind of what you're about and what you're working on and where you're working on and who your customer is. And I think generally you'll either if you don't get an appointment, you should at least get some information as to kind of what you need to do to get appointed, as long as you get someone on the phone. Because if you fill out one of these online applications asking to be appointed, that just kind of often goes into the abyss.
Yep, I've noticed that. We have in my agency, we actually started cutting appointments because when I first started, we were trying to be everything to everybody and realized that trying to be everything to everybody didn't work except to piss everybody off. And our service costs were high because we were continually having to manually touch policies because of service issues. So I made the conscious choice of I wanted to, instead of dealing with the smaller premium deals and touch them all the time, if I was going to touch a policy all the time, I wanted it to be larger premium and larger commissions so that way
Right.
I'd pay for the touch points. So in your agency, you built ways to not touch the policies as often. And that worked to make the smaller premiums more economically viable.
Yeah, exactly. And so that starts all the way from automated emails that are as easy to do, kind of I could set them up by myself and I'm not technical. Automated text messages. A lot of times is what you see, the churn you see in the market is really just maybe lack of follow-up on the agent side or just lack of kind of being conscious of the payment date from the customer side. And so I think even low cost, high leverage things like that can really make more things feasible for your business, right? And so things like that, and like I said, ultimately we even built our own app so customers can upload those pictures because it became a pain point for us. But even things like having a chat on our website, and making it easy for customers to contact us across different platforms, I think has made it much easier for us to garner leads. And I think one thing that often is probably overlooked as well is building that email list is extremely valuable in and of itself, because ultimately maybe you don't have the product the customer wants today or tomorrow, but ultimately you have a line of communication to a customer that ultimately you can evaluate whether when you're adding a new product, right, whether you want to add that new market. Because I think like you said, at some point you don't want all the appointments, right? You want to have as much, you want to cover as many of the customers with as few appointments as possible to make sure you can specialize and build the kind of the relevant tools. But I think there's a lot of low-hanging fruit that often gets overlooked. And even having a website with an email capture or some ability to submit information for a quote that can get the process started asynchronously, I think is extremely valuable.
I'm going over the show notes and I'm reading one that really stands out. It says that you're working on solving customer problems that are invisible to today's insurance execs. And being an agent, man, half the time you're wooing the underwriters and half the time you're swearing at them. And you know that that goes all the way up the food chain to the C-level execs. So can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, look, I think it comes down to a couple of things. And like you alluded to, as the agent, you're close to the customer, you know who they are, you know what they need. And so it can be quite frustrating when either it feels like those requests are falling on deaf ears or you can't seem to find the right solution. And I think that's a little bit of what I found. And ultimately, you take a look, and for example, when we were serving the Latinx market for auto insurance, It's very difficult to solve a community's problem if there's no representation, right? And Latinos are the most underrepresented group among insurance executives. And so even for us, like you and I, like you said, I never had any issues getting auto insurance. If I didn't happen to be staying at my aunt's house the day she asked for help with her auto insurance and then asked my cousin because of that, maybe I wouldn't have even figured it out myself, because look, insurance is deep and it's big and it's opaque and it's complicated, and it's a lot of big legacy companies that require a lot of data and a lot of momentum to move. And so a lot of new ideas kind of die at entry level with these big carriers. And so I think that's also kind of the opportunity you've seen for insurtechs, that now all of a sudden technology has lowered the cost to enter the market or build your own product and program. And so I think that's also an opportunity for agents, that now these insurtechs are out in the market looking at independent agents to distribute their product, and maybe providing something closer to your customers' needs. But I think the invisible part kind of holds true. It's difficult to solve someone's problem if you don't know anyone with that problem. It's difficult for people to believe that our business, that is 99% Spanish language, could exist, because they don't know anyone that only speaks Spanish, even though the US, like I think I mentioned, is the second largest Spanish speaking country in the world. 25% of the 60 million Latinos in the US only speak Spanish. Three quarters are Spanish dominant. And so I think that kind of speaks to how these problems can be invisible and yet kind of right in our faces as agents interacting with our customers and being on those front lines, right? And so I think part of it is as agents maybe advocating for customers, but I think there's also a huge opportunity for entrepreneurs to look at the insurance space and realize that we all of a sudden can even better segment the target population. And you said earlier, if you're shouting at everybody, you're shouting at nobody. And I tend to say that a product built for everybody's a product built for the majority, but it's not built for everybody. And so I think that leaves a lot of people out. But now with modern tech and a lot of the tools that are available in the market, I think there's an ability to plug those gaps that we see in the legacy, kind of from legacy providers. And I think that's really what it comes down to. It's kind of just maybe more awareness and more ad, but ultimately, I can get in front of as many big insurance company CEOs as I want and kind of lay out this problem that seems obvious when I pitch it. But without data and without that historical data, these giant insurance companies will not move. They know exactly how much one more dollar of marketing is going to yield, and they're not going to spend it on a product they have no idea how it's going to perform. And so I think that's where it comes down to agents that have that data, that can collect that data. If there's an ability to kind of track those claims and collect that data, I think is really valuable. But again, an opportunity for startups to come in and kind of test these hypotheses at lower cost than maybe these larger insurers could. And so that's kind of the opportunity we saw, because it seemed like while everyone nodded their head and said that yes, this made sense, no one was really solving for it.
Do you know of many agencies that are actually tracking their loss ratios? Because
It's
I didn't track a loss ratio until it started affecting the commission or affecting my appointment. Then I would all of a sudden start paying attention. But if you were to ask me, hey, what's my loss ratio for this demographic or that demographic? I can tell you, I didn't have the technology to look that up.
Even today, tying claims to individual policies is tough. The best we were able to do, and only with some of our markets, is get a loss ratio by carrier for our book of business. And that was us trying to track it, right? And I guess it depends what your product is and who your carrier is, whether you can get that data. But I think as an agent, like you said, it's difficult to do. And I don't know many agencies that can track that closely.
I had a hard time because the insureds necessarily wouldn't report their claim through my office.
Right.
So I would call on a renewal Or I would get a non-renewal notice and I'd be like, okay, why is this being non-renewed? And then I find out that there was a claim and I didn't even know about the claim. So it's kind of hard to track what you don't have visibility on.
Yeah, 100%.
And for somebody like me who has great empathy for that the demographic, but I'm not necessarily, I'm viewed as an outsider to that demographic. How are some of the ways that I could help break into that and show them, hey, listen, I care, I want what's best for you. I want to connect with you. I want to help and to grow my agency through that compassionate service. What are some of the, are there any tips that you can give me that would help me do that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple ways you can serve. I think particularly when talking about your own agency, I think it comes down to hire someone that looks like the community you want to serve, that can come in with some of those relationships and that can build those relationships. I think it makes a big difference, right? I think it's hard to learn a whole new communication style or language in some cases, right? And so I think bringing that kind of help on board, if you're able, makes a big difference, and I think will immediately open up doors. And it's probably the most practical way to do it. Otherwise, I think looking at partnerships as well, right? Look, who, what agencies are serving this demographic? Is there any expertise you can lend? Is there any markets you can lend potentially? But is there ways to partner with businesses that are already serving the community, whether it's insurance providers or maybe other businesses, right? I think there's always an opportunity there to borrow that credibility and borrow kind of that relationship. And so I would say those are always the top two recommendations I give for someone asking, hey, what's the best way to access or serve here? Because I think ultimately you could go out and translate every pamphlet you have and translate your website and maybe run a few Spanish language ads. But ultimately, if someone calls in and wants to speak to someone in Spanish or maybe has a particular circumstance that would be familiar to someone from the community, whether it's someone who's undocumented that has come recently and maybe they feel more comfortable talking to someone that's familiar with that problem, or someone who are maybe adding a non-family member to their policy that live at another address, or things that are kind of idiosyncratic to the community you're serving, I think get a lot more easier to service when you have someone from the community serving the customer. And so I think there's two ways that you do that, either hiring someone or going through partnerships. And I think ultimately there's you can build with a focus there, but like you said, it's you want to be more inclusive, but you also want to be conscious of your agency's profitability and viability and sustainability. And so while it'd be great to be able to offer everyone personal non-standard state minimum limits, it's a tough business to be in, and if you're an agent powered business, it's even more difficult to be in, right? That's why these fees get charged. And so if you're not building specifically for that, it's also difficult too. So I think it's being conscious of where you can help and how you can.
Thank you, Nestor. So, do you have any parting words of wisdom that you can give our agents?
No, I think there's the agent role is it's funny in insurance. I feel like every now and then someone comes out and says that there's technology that's going to be the main distribution channels, but I think the insurance still needs to be sold, and building a community and informing and providing access is the agent's role, and I think is where the agent's power lies. And so I think I encourage agents to kind of double down on that customer relationship, because I think ultimately that's where the value is, and the stronger the relationship with your customer, the better your retention is going to be, and then that leads to long-term profitability. And so I think the parting piece of advice is think about ways where you can build a community and where your kind of zone of genius or your expertise or your niche kind of lies.
That's it for this edition of the Insurance Huddle. We'll see you next time. In the meantime, be sure to check out our Facebook page and Medium blog, linked in the description box down below, for more great resources. This podcast has been brought to you by CoverWallet for Agents, the easiest way for insurance agents to quote, bind, and service their small business clients. All online and in minutes. Check us out at coverwalletforagents.com.